was like my blackness was way too loud. Even being Afro-Latina was way too loud, and was crazy as I tried to assimilate and I was still too loud. With my clothes, I was still too loud. With my fashion sense, I was too loud. Changing hair and nails, lashes, the basics that, you know, was everything to me, was accessories to me, was too loud for them. Whether I spoke or not, I was loud. And I had to ask myself, do I always want to measure myself to what they see as loud or quiet? And so I had to make a choice.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside that hyphen, y'all. Beside it. This is Sky, always on your side.
You sound like a news anchor.
That was what I was going for.
Always on your side. Well, I'm not on your side today.
Wow.
Unless you want me to be.
No.
Okay, fine. I'm not. But I am rooting for you.
We were all rooting for me.
We were all rooting for you.
Who are you, sis? Who are you?
How could you do this? You look at this. You look at what you've done.
Those are not even the lines.
Whatever, Tyra. Those weren't the lines.
I only yell at a girl like this.
Because I love her. My mama used to yell at me like this.
But to be fair, we really were all rooting for Tiffany.
Everybody was rooting for Tiffany.
Like, you know what she had to go through to get a swimsuit?
All those excuses. What her grandmama did for her to get yes. that swimsuit?
Foregoing food, y'all.
Listen.
So that Tiffany could... Let me stop. Oh my God. Because I was a deep A&TM stan,
oh,
y'all.
Yes, for a few seasons.
Oh, no. I was there for...
Naima? Excuse me?
Of course I was there for Naima.
Okay. Well, that was like season four. Five.
I was there for at least 12 seasons.
Oh. You got into the double digits, girl.
Oh, yeah. Me and my dad used to like sit on the couch and watch it together.
Oh, my God. I was
like,
not
he would
loyal.
Complain about it. He was like, oh, well, this is stupid. And then I would try to change the channel for him. He'd be like, no, you put it back on there.
That's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah. Such a good. Who are you? You still haven't introduced yourself, sis.
Oh. I am Perrine Tyra Banks DeShield.
Who is your favorite A&TM model, BCW?
Actually,
like
my
it doesn't
best
have
friend,
to be winner, just anyone.
Well, my best friend and I were going down a rabbit hole the other day.
Oh, I thought you were
going
to say your best friend was on there. I was about to say, girl, how I don't know.
You're acting like you don't know who my people are.
You're
me
right.
And Trey were talking about Kenya and how much we love Kenya and
I
how
love
wasn't
Kenya.
A colorism situation with Kenya and Naima?
It
was Kenya a better
because
model?
Because Kenya was a better model. Naima is a very pretty girl, but. Kenya was a bit like Naima was boring, like her photos skewed boring, but she was, you know, light skin, pretty eyes, quote unquote ish. I think they were like a lighter brown,
maybe.
I don't really remember, but
we were talking about Kenya, and then we started looking up old like Kenya like pictures from that season,
man.
And then I start stalking her on Instagram,
of course.
And she teaches modeling like lessons and workshops, and she's still getting a few covers. It
she
may be
better.
Local covers, but she getting a cover.
A covers. She got more covers than I do.
She got more covers than
the
I do.
The only covers I have are on my bed.
Wait, what was my girl's name who had like the low haircut, and she's in all the memes, and like it was after Tyra called her, and she was crying, and then she just. Ebony. Yes. Ebony.
Ebony was terrible.
Ebony.
But she was a great model.
Ebony.
She annoyed me though.
She was, and she's beautiful as
of course.
Well. So I'm also happy that we're not just looking at darker skinned women with like natural hair as like, oh, they're only high fashion. Like they're just beautiful women.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be categorized in this certain
they
weird
can do the gap
size element. They can do it all.
Right.
Okay.
They can model for the Gap. They can model for the swap meet.
Okay.
They can model for Gucci.
Okay.
It doesn't. Well, not Gucci because we offer them.
We
but I mean, honestly, most of these brands need to be canceled. But that's not my lane. That's Perrine's lane in terms of fashion. So I'm gonna keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, you know, when someone uses blackface, you know, in you know a huge campaign, you know, you would think.
Yeah.
You would think. That,
you would
you know,
really
they would
think
do better, but alas.
You would think, wouldn't you?
You would think.
Oh my God! So I'm looking at the top model list, and I made it to at least season 17.
What? How?
I didn't realize
how
that.
How many seasons okay. have they even had?
But here's the thing. You have to remember, Top Model would do like two seasons in a year. Yes.
You're right. When Tyra was like in it, she was deep.
Exactly. Because like season 16 started February 2011. Season 17 started September 2011.
My God.
Yes. It was just like back to back.
My God.
Yes. Oh my God. It started in 03.
Yes, girl.
I watched the show for a long time.
You don't
y'all.
Remember, like, I remember watching Tyra's like talk show and how she talked about like how bootleg that set was that first year.
It was, I recall.
And how like they just threw up like a drape.
Adrian Curry and Shannon. I remember them.
But I will forever stand for this.
Elise. I couldn't stand Elise.
Elise.
Mm-hmm.
What about, did you like Yaya? Yaya's, you know, one of the more breakout
Yaya
people.
Yaya was very pretentious
was
on
very,
the show.
Yeah.
Like, I understood what she was trying to do. I feel like she was, like, really trying to, like, and I think it's also, like, a thing with age, right? Like, at that time, she was, what, her early 20s, maybe late teens?
Yeah.
Like, but early 20s maximum. Like, that's, you know, an age where, like, there's you have a lot of hubris and, like, a lot of identity development is going on at that time. And that's so, like, you're really being staunch in whatever it is that you identify as. So it made sense.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have that perspective when it was happening.
Right. Like, I had a very love-hate relationship with her because I was like, oh, like, she black and she proud. Go right. Africa.
Right. But I was like, you making Africa look bad, sis. Shit
like, chill,
down.
Chill,
sit
sister.
Down.
But then they...
Don't... Why you not go for the Kente Club? Why you gonna insult the Kente Club?
Yeah.
She did a lot.
They kind of... But Tyra also kind of, I think they tried to wash down and play down her heritage too. And that was sometimes problematic.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting, but you know, and I'll never forgive that Whitney movie, but you know, alas.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
We all wish we could.
Oh, do you remember Flex Washington playing Michael Jackson?
I try to block that out my memory.
Speaking of terrible biopics.
That was horrendous. That should have never, and it was a multi-series, a multi-night event, and I sat and watched all of it. It was so bad. Oh my God.
Wow. Oh my God. That was fun.
It was.
That was a good belly chuckle that I just had.
Oh my God. You know.
But you know what? Bringing it back to Yaya, she's a perfect segue into today's topic. Around, especially like around like beauty standards and Afro-Latina folks. So let's go ahead and move into that so we don't have to think about Flex Washington anymore.
Our brain is like hot.
Oh, that was so bad.
Never again.
You're thinking about his
Block
face.
It on all
white
I don't want to think about that
the
face.
The white face.
I remember when he was dressed in the Michael outfit when he held blanket over the banister. And then he was saying, What's wrong? It's just blanket. It's just, you know, I wanted everybody to see blanket.
Oh my God.
And it was just.
I mean, he did a good Michael voice.
Oh my, did he?
I don't really recall the voice, honestly. I just remember the food, like
Let's burn
the picture in my
never
brain.
Think about this again. Ooh. Okay, we're not completely off track, guys, because again,
we kind of
like,
are.
We're not going to go in depth on how Michael Jackson runs several parallels to colorism, but you know, again,
yeah.
What Sky was trying to do and get us back on track.
Yes, I tried real hard.
Real hard, guys. It's just talking about, you know, the Latinx community, but specifically the Latina community, and even more specifically, the Afro-Latina community.
All these specificities.
You know, we got to go deep.
It's important. All of the marginalizations.
Yep. All of them. And how, obviously this is not a new concept. This is not a new ethnic group that just reemerged out of nowhere. But I feel like when something on a VH1 reality show happens, it kind of grabs a sector of pop culture, grabs a certain community's attention. And so when you had someone like Amara La Negra on A Love and Hip Hop, who is this beautiful Black Latina woman, and she's describing and culturally identifying herself as an Afro-Latina and speaks fluent Spanish, people are like confused.
Yeah, I mean, even like So this is on topic, I promise. I'm in a group chat like for like black women in this area or whatever, and it's like always popping with conversation. And I don't remember, Cardi B had said something or whatever that was like high key ratchet. I mean, because it's Cardi B. And someone had like posted a meme of it in the group, and so someone else responded like, "Man, Cardi B only gets away with this, or Cardi B wouldn't get away with this if she was black."
Huh?
I saw it. What? I screenshotted it and sent it to all of the other group mates I was a part of.
Huh?
I was like, "But," and then you know how sometimes you think that maybe you're wrong.
So you think you got it like
right. So I was like, "Well, let me make sure. Like, maybe I missed something."
Cardi B is black.
Like, I just did. I miss something. So you know, like, I went back in the archives, and I don't know. I said archives. I Wikipedia'd her.
Those are your archives.
Just a double, triple check, because it was just like one of those things where I was like, maybe I'm wrong, because she said it so confidently.
Yeah.
Like, if Cardi B were black, she wouldn't get away with this.
Wow.
And then like we had a whole conversation in that group me around like Afro Latinos and Afro Latinx folks and how exactly.
In different shades. Yes, as well.
Exactly.
You know,
not like, everyone's a Cardi, not everyone's an Amara La Negra.
Right. People are on the entire, it's a whole spectrum.
Yes.
It's a whole spectrum of Latinx people, period. And again, like we were saying, there are different racial groups within this ethnic group.
Yes.
And so, and for a lot of countries, there are a lot of multiracial, biracial people in those groups as well. So it does get a little not specific, I guess.
Yeah.
Like there are.
It just further shows how like race is a man-made concept and how it's really just stupid.
Yes. Very.
Like once you start to get into really like multiracial or biracial people or just even like this whole idea around like Latinx versus Afro-Latinx, like it just really shows you how this construct that white people came up with forever ago is dumb and
stupid.
We never should have allowed. Well, that's a whole nother story, girl. I'm not gonna do that.
It just should have never happened.
It should not happen. There we go. It just shouldn't have happened. We'll leave it at that.
So a few other, you know, Afro Latinx people that you may be familiar with.
Who? Maybe. Tell me more.
Maybe.
I'm intrigued.
So you have Lala Anthony.
Honestly, I love Lala.
Lala's actually everything.
I used to love her show. Ugh.
Her show was good.
It was lit.
But she, too, has been victim of a marriage that did not work. Former reality star.
I mean, they're still technically married, girl.
Okay.
They are married legally.
You're right.
I mean, she did go on stage the other day and say, F that, ..
I missed that one.
Yeah, she like got on stage at a concert or someone's concert. Obviously, it wasn't hers. And I don't know, they're probably talking about having a hot girl summer.
Okay.
And they're like, dump those like useless N-words who may be around you, like I did or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like very explicit that she was talking about Carmelo.
Okay.
Yes.
Well.
Anyway, Lala.
She's an Afro-Latina. Also on the list, you have Zoe Saldana, who may be a little more, I don't want to say problematic, but I think she can be somewhat problematic at times because she is a Latina who sometimes does not really steer or represent her Afro-Latina-ness, meaning claiming her African heritage. You know, that's her piece. That's her identity, I suppose. But I think that it also speaks to, like, I think, you know, the sadness that I think a lot of people like to suppress, you know, their actual African ancestry,
like,
that might be more apparent.
Like, she and I are basically the same complexion, so I really don't understand. But,
I don't either. So she's there. She exists.
It's fine. She does things.
But let's talk about one of my faves, Tatiana Ali. I stan.
Who stands Tatiana Ali in 2019? What is she doing?
It doesn't matter what she's doing, it's what she did, okay?
I'm not saying anything against her. I love Tatiana Ali.
And then her song,
her song was terrible. Don't even lie.
I can't even think of things to do.
I'm shocked that you remember this.
You know, my daydreams come true.
This is still happening.
I live.
I'm
that
supposed
song.
To be the singer on this podcast.
You're right.
Stay in your lane.
But you didn't know.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, she's boxing me in. Christina Milian.
I try to think of a song that
Kim Possible theme song. That's what we
call me, beat me if you want to reach me.
Yes, that's Christina Milian, honey. Kim Possible.
Yes, Kim Possible.
History.
You struggling, sis?
Oh, okay. But you know, taking it back to slightly problematic, you have your Sammy Sosa's as well.
Slightly? Is that we're just saying slightly? Are you just going for alliteration?
I was trying to be
here?
Kind.
I think you're just going for alliteration.
Yeah.
Because there ain't no slight here with Sammy Sosa.
You're right. Sammy Sosa.
Yo.
Haunts my nightmares.
This man.
He's a prime example of, I would say, self-hate. And a prime, you know, result of what colorism can do to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Physically. And mentally.
Yeah.
Emotionally. Because the extent of his transformation is ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I don't remember where I read this, and I don't remember if it was an actual reputable source. Mm-hmm. But regardless, I'm sure it's true whether or not he's talked about it. But it was like the fact that like he can't go out in the sun very much.
Yeah.
Because he's destroyed and stripped away his melanin.
Stripped it all, you know, away.
And melanin, as we have said before, and if you've ever taken any science class, is very important to human survival, particularly as this environment is getting worse.
Yeah. Pretty much, guys. And it's just very unfortunate. You know, we've talked so much throughout this season about, you know, the different themes, and we've talked about skin bleaching, and we've talked about being white passing and how the privilege that is, you know, correlating with that in so many cultures. We've talked about the caste system and all of these things.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you know what? Like Sammy Sosa, he does look like a white man now. He looks like the,
so there's the context too.
No, I was going for a joke, girl. Dang, man, she just ruined my joke. Honestly, only 85-year-olds are gonna get this joke, but it's fine. I was gonna say he looks like Grandpa from the Munsters.
Wait.
He does. He does.
Oh no!
I just showed her a photo. He looks like Grandpa from the Munsters.
Okay, I didn't really fully go with your Steph Curry and Chuck E. Cheese. But you may have nailed this.
I forgot about that. He looks, y'all, please go look up Al Lewis.
No.
Like in his like outfit, like not just Al Lewis as a person, who I'm sure was a lovely man. Well, actually, I don't know.
Oh no. He does.
He does. He looks like a monster. Ah, real monsters.
Ah. Oh God. Oh y'all, like it, but in all honesty, man, it's sad. You know, it's really sad. It really hurts my heart that he, as a Black Dominican person,
mm-hmm. who was so important for the culture at that, like
such
the
a huge,
was that or late 90s?
Yeah, baseball
time,
like
yeah.
legend.
Yes.
He's a baseball legend. And it's just, you know, what that means to so many
mm-hmm.
Black Dominican men and boys.
Yeah, who were growing up at that time, looking up to him.
And looking up to him. And that looked like him.
Mm-hmm.
And then what, I don't know. You know, I understand that a lot of celebrities and people in, you know, high ranks, whatever in society may not care to be role models. I get it. But it doesn't, you know, make the fact that what he's done and transformed himself is something that's very disheartening. And so, man, it's just, we really wanted to talk about the Latinx community, obviously, because we really feel like it's a very complex situation, I think, with complexion and how colorism has really affected this community.
And how colonialism has affected the community. Yeah, and has affected colorism.
Yes. It's extensive in all communities, but I think it's something we really wanted to highlight for sure, like within this one. This is Ohavia's story.
My name is Ohavia Phillips, and I culturally identify as Afro-Latina. Growing up in New York, it is like a melting pot. It really is. Like, so you have so many different cultures, but then you have different looks, right? When we talk fashion, and then there's food. And literally, I feel like growing up in New York, I grew up in a museum. It's like with every turn of the hallway, you see like it's something different. When you like hop off the train and you get into another, you know, borough, it's like, oh my gosh, it's like a different group of people. And so you learn to appreciate art, you learn to appreciate people, cultures. And I loved it because it was so easy. You know, it was like, okay, we get this. Like, we're family. We're from different boroughs, but we're family. And so it was just so, it's a beautiful thing. It's like legit growing up in New York is like a museum. It was something different with every train ride. Each time you like walk down different streets, it was just, it's a museum. I'm the oldest of five. So grandpa is Costa Rican and Jamaican. Grandma is from Sumter, South Carolina. So I'm not sure how that happened. But so grandma, grandpa, me, and then they have my mom. My mom speaks Spanish. Like, that's how it goes down. She speaks Spanish. When we moved to the South, she kind of lost it a little bit. So we call it bodega Spanish. It's when you like mix English with Spanish and you're like, you know what I'm trying to say. And my favorite is when my mom go, entonces, and I'm like, I know what you're trying to say. So the family dynamic was fantastic. All I know is a home full of people, right? So grew up in a home on Blake Avenue, which is in Brooklyn. And it was all of us, grandma, grandpa, mommy, and my siblings. Then my mom was like, okay, you know what? Let's move south because it's getting kind of expensive. And we ended up doing the same thing. So even our dynamic here is grandma, grandpa, mommy, and siblings. But growing up in New York, what I loved was nobody assumed your culture. Right? So I looked the way I did, but they weren't like, okay, she's black. I looked the way I did, but it wasn't like, okay, she's just one thing. What I loved about the city of New York, Brooklyn specifically, was nobody was one thing. And there was that accommodation that was unspoken. It was like, well, we're not going to assume because, like, you know, we don't know. And what I love is because we're such a melting pot, it was never assumed. So you'll walk in a bodega and they'll be like, mama, está bien. And you're like, oh my God, yes, hola, señor. And then it's like, okay, but we knew because you look like, but you don't look like. So what I loved is growing up in Brooklyn, it's just, we never assume cultures because you don't know. And it was easy, very easy. Moving from New York to the South was a challenge. And it was a challenge because my skin complexion was never questioned in New York. I never have nobody come after my skin complexion. I never had nobody come after my hair. I never had nobody come after my accent. And so moving to the South, right into middle school, seventh grade, which is like, first of all, that in itself was a challenge. As the oldest of five, going into seventh grade in a new city, I ain't even gonna hold you. That was such a challenge. So for me, it was like, okay, so what does this look like? Where do I begin? I didn't make friends. I had things stolen from my locker, like first week of school. I was made fun of. My complexion was made fun of. The way that I had my hair was made fun of. And it was, I'm not going to lie, Perrine, it was a challenge. And it was like, but wait, this never happened to me back home. So what started happening, I was finding that I was trying to accommodate Southern culture. So how the girls out here did their hair at the time, the accessories that they adorn themselves with. Like growing up in Afro-Latina culture, there's no painted nails, there's no hoop earrings. Like we keep it real, natural beauty, keep it real simple. Move to the South, I try to accommodate those things with, okay, the more is better. I even permed my hair. You know, I know, no. So here's the thing. So when we talk hair, my mom always kept flat twists in my hair, flat twists and a ponytail. And so moving to the South, there was kind of that pressure, like, I want to wear my hair out all the time. Like, they need to know, like, don't play with me. My hair's down my back. Right. So we transitioned from flat twist ponytails, buns, all that stuff, to now I feel like Southern culture kind of pressured me to say, okay, well, let me straighten this thing out. Let me rock it a different way. I almost wanted to even color my hair in middle school, and mom was not with it, right? So that transition was not easy. On top of having siblings behind me who couldn't understand the culture, trying to maintain being Afro-Latina. They don't really know much about it, don't want to do with it. It's just easy to check black in the box. And it's like, but there's so much more to us. Like, it's awesome. You know what I'm saying? And like, and also the pressure for me not wanting to always be the one to have that conversation in my classroom, like, hey, I'm both. And not having to explain what West Indian mean and prove it. You're Spanish, say something. It's real. It's real. And just the anger, going home angry, like for that first month, was like, I was told like, well, if you're really Spanish, say something. Say, where is this? Or, okay, well, what part in Costa Rica? And it was like, ma'am, I will jump you after school. Like, so it's just, it was unnecessary pressure on top of trying to be a good example and hold on to a culture that my siblings didn't understand, but I did. I came out here and like to be called Blackie or to be like somebody, like, I mean, we would be here all night. Some of the stuff is so obscene, I don't even want to like utter twice. But it was just like, but wait though, back home, this isn't even a thing. But a hint of it, to be honest, was at family functions. I have a cousin who shall not be named, but she's great. Love her. Okay, great. I have a cousin who is Spanish, very, very light, very light. Long fair hair, and like she was everybody's like favorite cousin. She's the one you walked up the block with to show her off. And a hint of it was when I was walking side by side with her, and I was like, well, I'm standing, you know. And I was trying to identify why they thought that was more beautiful than, you know, because we're standing side by side. Like, I'm trying to understand, okay, well, what makes her so more beautiful than me, right? So that was a hint of it. But moving to the South, I feel like it all came together, and I was like, oh, so this is a thing. And it got so bad that my mom literally had to sit me down, and she was like, let's discuss this. Like, I thought we had more time. I was in seventh grade, 13, 14, and here my mom is having a conversation with me about why it does not matter, you're still beautiful. What? A teacher asked me to do something, and I didn't hear her, right? It was just, class was loud, whatever. I said, what was it? She was like, well, what do you need me to do? Say it in Spanish for you? Girl, you would turn up missing 24 hours or less. I feel like people want to be able to put people in a box. They want to be able to say, okay, well, she looks like this, so let's call her this. She speaks like this, so let's call her this. Personally, I feel like on both sides, even identifying as Afro-Latina, there's like skin complexion complexes on that side. And then even saying, okay, I'll just identify as black. But then I moved to the South and there was still like, okay, but there's dark and then there's light. So I felt like I could never escape it. And what ended up happening was I just had to realize, okay, this is the skin that I'm in and I'm going to carry this culture, because honestly, to be true, like, my siblings didn't want anything to do with it because it's like, we don't understand it. And it's just easier this way, right? It's easy to assimilate. It's just easy. So let's just be easy. I remember even growing up, my pops was like, okay, like, to my mom, don't let her grow up speaking Spanish. Just let her speak English. You know, just let her speak English. Just leave it. And I remember my mom like, no, we're going to do both in this house. And my mom was speaking me in Spanish. And I admire my mom so much. She'll go in bodegas, even because my mom is an RN. They would use her to translate on the floors. And it was just so beautiful. And she still, like, still, even when she worked at whatever, Atrium Health, which is a hospital here in North Carolina, she still would do that sometimes. And so what I loved is she never gave up on the culture. And she always said, when grandpa dies, it's me. But when I die, who's it going to be? And so I took that on. Personally, but to answer your question, I feel like honestly, it's twofold. It's on this side with my Afro-Latina family having light cousins, blue eye, long hair, and then there's me. And then on like just like Southern culture, black culture, there's that too. So you just got to be comfortable and assure, like, this is what I'm carrying. This is legacy. It has nothing to do with complexion. It's about my legacy. Like about a week ago, I sat with my grandpa, said, Grandpa, I'm so excited about this podcast. This is a very good friend of mine. I'm so excited to get to carry a legacy on the airwaves. What's one thing you want me to say? Like, and what's crazy is he was like, you know, I guess I wish I knew more about my own roots so I could tell you what to say. And I said, this is interesting. What do you mean? And he's like, well, I know I'm Jamaican, but I never knew my dad. And we grew up in Guanacaste, but we moved. And even my grandfather, as a boy growing up in Costa Rica, he had those complexes. He was called Monkey, right? And so they moved around a lot because he was teased. Then he was a boy of the streets. You know what I'm saying? He was like a niño de calle. So he was rude boy. He was all around, no parents, figuring it out, and then grew up to be this man with no roots. So he identified like, no, I know I'm Spanish, speak Spanish, but have no roots. So even not knowing, he was like, I don't know if I should tell you more about the Jamaican side, but I don't know what to tell you. And he was like, I identify with being Costa Rican, and it's all these memories that he has. But it's just funny that even if we take it back to grandparents, legacy is a thing that we took on, which I'm grateful for, because we want to maintain the culture and we want to maintain not a culture, but our history. But for our grandparents, it was survival. For them, it was survival. So for us, it's like we get to toss around these words like legacy and generational wealth and heritage, and they gone no. But for our grandparents, it was like, I was just trying to eat. I was just trying to survive. Grandpa came out here. He was like, he told like his family, he was like, I'm gonna buy some bread, I'll be back. Somehow put all his money together to make it to New York one way and figured it out. Sleeping on park benches, trying to figure it out. Became a security guard at a hospital, was translating, and was using what he had to survive. And then met my grandma and all these things happened. So when you see it like that, it's humbling, because his journey to me is legacy, but to him it was survival. And that's why I love discussions like this, because we need to open this up to be like, okay, well, even if you talk to your grandparents, what does that look like? What does that sound like? It's like, I was just out here trying to hold it for y'all. And here you are talking about it on the podcast. What is a podcast? Grandpa was like, what's that? Like, I'm so proud. You know what I'm saying? But I'd be like, Grandpa, I just want to tell you a story. And he was like, I don't know where to start. So when we talk representation that helped me maintain like that inner confidence, Free from AJ and Free. From 106 in Park, because what I loved is she was natural. She never bent or broke on that. Like, you can look at vintage episodes on YouTube and see she had her like afro picked out, or even if she straightened her hair, she had flat twists. She was that positive image for me that made me see, like, and I knew I wanted to do TV from a young age, but she was that positive representation of, see what I'm talking about? Her body was hers, her hair was hers, okay? And she wasn't trying to be nobody else. She kept her New York accent. She was like, welcome to 106 in Park. And I loved that she was just so proud of who she was. AJ too, in the sense of having dreads on air, right? That was something that we kind of overlooked, but looking back is major. So for me, those two definitely were positive representation. But like, aside from pop culture, my mom keeping me in the arts. So like, I went to Camp Paddigat, which was like a melting pot. So we had Haitians, Africans, West Indians, Afro-Latinos. Like, we had that there. And my mom was so intentional about keeping me in those things every summer. So to me, it's like, you know, we like, you couldn't tell me nothing. We had bachata class, and then we had arts and crafts. We had salsa, and then it was like doing the chicken head to hip hop 101. So like, it was, you know, my mom, she did that. Like, she was intentional. She was like, every summer, I don't care how much it is. And then like, I could do the bachata, but also did point ballet. So she really made sure that we didn't stray from the culture, but also with, you know, it was just enough to appreciate who we were, but also like, okay, this is what's real, but I'm still gonna put my very blackity black Afro-Latina hola como esta ass in it. Shout out to mommy, I love you, Mahalia Hansen, she's so great. Single mom doing the damn thing, and made sure like we were well versed. I, you know, little things like knowing how to swim. So that whole myth of like, black people don't know how to swim. I remember when I heard that joke, I was like, that's a thing, because I'm nice with it. Like, backstroke was good. I was Michael Phillips, because my last name's Phillips. Michael Phelps came along, I said, sir, I was first. My grandparents were too afraid. It was easy for my mom to assimilate, you know? They even, like, she was wearing hazel contacts when she was like 18, 19. I'll look back at pictures. I'm like, mom, that ain't your eye color. She was like, girl, we figuring it out, girl. We figuring it out. And had all her gold on. I'm like, mom, you so, mom. But anyway, because she's going to be listening. Love you, mom. But I say all that to say, like, her parents didn't do that for her. So she was very intentional with me and my siblings about knowing how to do it all. She was the type of mom, we throwing you in the water and you're going to learn how to swim. But it was beautiful, because as I grew up, now 27, I'm like, okay. So if I don't know it, it's because I choose not to. But it doesn't mean I can't like dive in and realize I have access too. I'm just so blessed. Like, when I'm down, they know just what I need. When I need space, they know just what I need. They do know. And I'm grateful for siblings who support me. And especially with this whole entrepreneurship thing, and especially pushing culture while I'm doing it, right? And I'm also big on mentioning to people, like, I'm your favorite Afro-Latina, whipping it like Farina. And like, my siblings be like, yes! You know, like, they support those things. And that's major for me. But they do know. And when we talk culture to them, my sister wants to pick up Spanish, so I'm very proud. She's a social worker, licensed 2 times, 2 degrees, have her own practice. And she wants to take on us, right? Black and brown clients. And she was like, you know what? The other day we were talking, she was like, I want to translate my own. Like, I don't want to pay anybody, excuse me, to do that. I want to do it. So She's taking up Spanish. The 15-year-old at Butler's taking up Spanish. They said he's so advanced, but see, it comes out because it's in you. So, like, they're like, we're so shocked. And he's like, I'm not. Like, it's in my family. I just didn't tap in. The 13-year-old's at Mint Hill Middle. He's taking up Spanish. The 21-year-old, he's an artist, so he paints. And if you see his pieces, it's very, it's, oh, my God. It's, like, whimsical, like, it's whimsical, but it's so, like, colorful. It reminds me of Gloria Estefan, you know, real like come on, shake your body, real Miami Nights, real. And like, it's crazy how it comes out in our art form, because it was never buried. It just wasn't, it just wasn't cultivated. It was never, you know, buried. It just wasn't cultivated. And so what's happening is you come to an age of accountability when you're like, okay, I could keep not mentioning this, but it's everywhere around, or I can own it and make it come out in my art form. Career path wise looked like, so I was the youngest producer at, not to be mentioned, local news. And, you know, year one was fantastic because I was assimilating. Year two was fantastic. I was pretending like I didn't know who I was. Year three was great because I was just doing what they wanted me to do. Year four, I don't know what it was about that year, but I got my mind right, snapped out of it. But between year one and four, it was this idea of like, I would do little things, like I would do my nails a certain way, or I would change my hair. And I did not like that I was, what's the word? I did not like that I was always like a coffee conversation. Like, did you see Ohavia's hair this week? She changed it this week. Those nails just keep getting longer and longer. And it, those little things kind of made it uncomfortable for me. But see, I'm the type of chick, I'm like, well, if you gonna talk, let me add some gems to like the ring nail. Or if you gonna talk, you know what I'm saying? Like, we gonna get deep with it. So, but it influenced and it inspired me to move on and move out. So working at said local news station, there was a lot of low-key how to act, how to do your hair, how to carry yourself. Year in reviews, my executive producer, she pulls me in with the big boss, right, the GM. And the GM goes, we've heard so much about Ohavia, like just, you know, what's one thing though, like she can improve on? And she literally goes, Ohavia talks too much and she's way too friendly. And she talks so loud and she's way too friendly. It's a newsroom, this isn't a party. So like, if we could figure out any way where she can tone it down or where we can separate her so she's not distracting her colleagues, can we make that happen? And I remember looking like, I'm in the Twilight Zone. I'm in the Twilight Zone. And I looked at the GM was like, that is absolutely inappropriate. This is her personality. Like, I can't even believe that that was said, but there wasn't much that he could do, right? So moving forward, it just never was the same. It was like my blackness was way too loud. Even being Afro-Latina, I was way too loud. And what's crazy is I tried to assimilate and I was still too loud. With my clothes, I was still too loud. With my fashion sense, I was too loud. Changing hair and nails, lashes, the basics that, you know, was everything to me, was accessories to me, was too loud for them. Whether I spoke or not, I was loud. And I had to ask myself, do I always want to measure myself to what they see as loud or quiet? And so I had to make a choice. One day I pulled up to work and I was in the parking lot. I sent a resignation text, not letter, not email, not conversation. I sent a text to my EP. All I told her was, thank you for all you taught me, but it's my time to go. And I drove out that parking lot, not having any money saved up, not knowing what was next. I said, God, we need black and brown girls to know what this looks like, know what this sounds like, and let them know it's okay. And I'm willing to champion that. I don't care how heavy it is. I know the crown will be heavy, but dang it, if it's lopsided, I'm still with a bitch. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just being honest. So drove off the parking lot and I didn't know what I was embarking on. A year later, launched two live shows, My Way, have phenomenal sponsorships, being able to have people get back in tune with their inner selves and helping them. And that's the thing, they were already on the journey. I was just like the big sister pushing them to keep going. And so I'm doing it my way and I'm happy, I'm healthier, I'm skinnier. My weaves are longer. My nails are longer and I'm loud. Amen. So my passion is all things media, people, and community service. So I have a business. It's a talk show business called The O Show. And what I do with The O Show is I just create all things positive media, inspiring, encouraging, to let people know at the foundation, you still have you, you can work with you, go out and kill it. And so between hosting, emceeing, moderating, collaborating, and my own show, which is like full time, I'd be surprised I have space to do all the other stuff. Grateful. That's what I do in every space, is let you know how special you are, by a smile, by a joke, by a Millie Rock. And that's just what I do. So end goal for O Show is to buy a building here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and open it up for paid internships for black and brown boys and girls, specifically of single parent households. I don't care, as long as your grade point average is 3.5, let me show you this thing called media for us. There's not enough representation of us. I want to have a hand in that, and instead of complaining, let me just buy back a block, start a media hub, multiple floors in this said building that I buy back, paid internship for black and brown girls and boys. Then I want to go back to Brooklyn, buy back a bodega, and so it will be called the bodega, because it's like, this is for y'all, for us, by us, in media. And so it'll be paid internships, expose them to things, expose them to like TED Talks and things that, you know, I wish I had growing up, to kind of center them around like, what does my skin look like in this space, and why I still rock in this space when we talk media. So one of the biggest challenges that I faced was jealousy. Also understanding that I'm worth the price that I gave them. Also funding and finding venues. And it's crazy, as I'm trying to find a venue to pass on positivity, I'm not asking for money. I'm not asking for anything outrageous. I just want a space where people can come lay down their burdens and just realize how awesome they are. And it's been such a challenge to find a space to do that, funding, or when I name a price for what I do, I get pushback. And the jealousy part is out of this world, but we're in the mountain of media. And what's unfortunate is when someone isn't secure and they meet a fireball, what's gonna happen? It's like, that's too much. Let me see how I can like one up. Sis, you can't one up me, bro. You can't one up me. I'm out of this world. The gag. You know what? I'm going to say this right here on the podcast. I'm out of this world. I don't even live here. Okay. So those have been very challenging things. And what I say to those people are, listen, you missed it. Congratulations, you played yourself. Because we're supposed to come together for the younger generation, because they need to know what it looks like for us helping each other out. So you played yourself. You missed your cue in line. And I just skipped you. Here's some lemonade. Do you like what's the cookies? Lena Dorns. Do you like cookies? Cause you missed you missed your spot in line. So go sit. But what I tell them is, be blessed. And so when we talk social media, how I stay focused, not bought down, and positive. This is free game. I post and go. I do not scroll. Hear me. I can't. I've tried it. I've been there. I've done it. And I did not like how it pulled. I didn't like how it pulled my spirit so low. Like, and I mean, it was getting to a point, y'all, I would wake up, pray, Instagram, or even Facebook. And I was like, dang, what's happening to me? And what was happening was, on my entrepreneurship journey, when I was trying to figure out how I wanted to kind of put Osho in this beautiful sphere, because it ain't a box. It's like, when I put it in a circle, I found that I didn't like how I would like take something from somebody inadvertently and didn't mean it. So like a tone from somebody. And I was like, how did that happen? And it's crazy because your brain is registering. You just don't know. So every time you watch your favorite's video, just try it. Like if you watch your favorite, you realize like you pick up something up there. So for example, B. Simone is my absolute favorite. And sometimes I find like even when I'm in spaces where it's like, okay, I'm full-time Ohavia, I do things like my baby, nah, 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 and it's like, I don't even talk like that. You know what I'm saying? So no shade on B. Simone or nobody, no influencer or no comedian, none of that. But it's like, those are the little things that we have to protect ourselves from. So I post and I go. I don't scroll unless like I'm tagged in something. I'm like, oh my God, I love you. And that's why I share the love. And it's crazy. Or like if you have big news, I will like, let me touch in and see what Brina's doing. Or you know what I'm saying? But y'all, post and go. Free game. Post that picture that you know. As long as you know it's fire, it doesn't matter how many likes it gets. Sometimes I look back and I'll be like, 500? What? You know, but I don't be looking, you know? I'm just like, 500 people thought that was a look, but I thought it was a look first. So 550, super self-affirmed, my love. Like, it's this idea of, I like this outfit, this lighting is amazing, or whatever, and it is what it is, but I post and go, babe. And like 9 times out of 10, I hear the reports from other people about likes and comments, and did you see who? No, like, yeah, I have to, girl. I've been low before. I do not like it. I don't. Oh, girl, I'm like, this ain't it. Like, what y'all are hearing, complete opposite if I don't do this. I don't like that space. Mm-mm. So I have no choice. They leave me no choice. Even going back to the root of what we're talking about today, if you have an accent, a lot of people who upload content on a daily, if you ever watch like progression, because you know I've watched one person, she's a content creator and she's Afro Latina, and I've watched like months go by and slowly it's like her accent disappears and it's like, why is that a thing? Or like there's like this kind of idea where it's like, I'm just gonna hide it, we're not gonna talk about it, you're gonna know it's there, it's gonna be in the bio, but like let's focus on this. And so what I don't like is how social media waters down culture, heritage, differences, inclusion. I don't like how it waters those aspects down, because people put it in a bio, but you won't see them celebrate Independence Day for their country. You won't see people adorn the, you know, their homeland's gear. You won't see, you know, and don't say it's shallow. If it's a part of you, it's who you are. You should know these things. You should know the date of your Independence Day. You should know, you know, when this came to this, when this was this. Why is it in your bio, but you're not showing it out? This is not a, like, this isn't something to be adorned. Like, this is not for funsies. That's culture. People have died. People were killed for what you just threw up in a bio. So what I don't like is how social media kind of like waters that aspect down just so everybody can feel comfortable. How I celebrate being Afro-Latina on social media, Perrine will tell y'all, is I dance my butt off. I actually just posted a photo mid-bachata at my live show. People were gagging. They was like, did your ponytail go with your bachata? I said, it did. It did. So how I celebrate and let it be known in every space, wherever I go, you get a Milly Rock, you get a bachata. When I'm in spaces, whether it's nonprofit, major banks, corporations, or whether it's just like, you know, a dope event, you're going to know. Because there are so many people's shoulders I'm standing on that wish they had this moment. And I'm not putting that down for nobody. There's so many of my ancestors like, girl, go, 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 go. And their bachata and in their graves. And all I can do is bring it to the surface for them, because they dreamed about what I'm doing. And I'm actually doing it. So I'm taking the whole squad with me. So how I celebrate, and y'all look this up because it's legit. Look it up. I dance on my videos. And it's always Afrobeat. Or it's like reggaeton, or like here and there is hip hop, but it's old to Brooklyn. It's gonna be some hip hop in there, but always, because it keeps me centered even as a content creator. When those things are there, it's like, okay, this is who Ojavia is. Cool, now we can create. Being a first gen, being a firstborn, listen, I get it. I understand you. I hear you. It's hard. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm the oldest of five. My mom's Spanish, is five. But like, I get it, but it's those beautiful parts that people are looking for. It's what's going to set you apart when you're applying for a job, or when you want to be a content creator, or it's going to be your edge. And sooner or later, you're going to realize if you continue to just compact it and pretend that it's not there, you're just going to like drown with the rest of all the people who are one hit wonders and all those people who don't want to address who they are, because you're running away from something that's going to give you the edge, that's going to make you float. So do you want to sink or swim? Because you have the key to float. Your buoy is your culture. Your buoy is your heritage. Your buoy is that accent that you have. Your buoy is that hair that you rock. You want to rock all your rings on all your fingers, all your earrings and all your earring holes? Do it, because that's from our ancestors. It's cultural. It's a thing. It's not for no reason. So do them a favor. Do them the justice and take it with you. So listen, mi gentes, you can follow me at Ojavia Phillips on everything, legit. I keep it simple because I want people to find me. And honestly, my name is mad different. So Ojavia, O-H-A-V-I-A, Phillips, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S, yes, on everything. And listen, I'm good for it. If you comment on something, I send hearts to people. I send love. We need more of that. It's not there. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to just be it. So put me to the test and watch what happens. I said what? Can y'all hear my acrylics clapping?
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast. It helps other people find us and truly, truly makes a huge impact on the success of this podcast. We can also be found on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and truly anywhere else you get your podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's the number one, STGENS. Plus, get tons of bonus content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by me, Perrine DeShield, and is co-hosted by my lovely and talented cousin, Sky Wilson, and I. Our musical composer is the wonderful and talented Nick Stubblefield. A huge thank you to our special guest for sharing their First Gens experience today. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, a co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for all of your love and support.